let me take this opportunity to thank him for carrying on our meeting at our last meeting. And while he didn't go into a lot of exculpatory detail, I thank him for doing that, because if it hadn't happened to you yet, keep living. We'll have some challenges that will go on in families, that we put everything else down and we go to be with family. And if I were in church, I would probably say amen. But since we're in the Capitol, just know that I do thank Commissioner Vice Chair Banks for carrying on.
Thank you.
And I thank the commissioners for also standing in the gap. And today we have Commissioner Graves and Commissioner Berry with us. Commissioner Tipton and the others had some other commitments that they were involved with and will not be here, but we do have a quorum. And Attorney Mahfouz always kind of keep us honest in what we should and should not do from the AG's office, so we're happy to have her here. Couldn't have been done without Melanie Jenkins, who stepped in the gap for us, and we're here to do the people's business. And with that, we welcome the media here to share our end of our considerations for the people. And we thank our witnesses, and we thank those of you who represent the judiciary, the executive, and even the legislative body to come and give us input. Commissioners, I don't know if we've had an opportunity to look at the minutes from the May 16th meeting, but let's take a moment and do that, and I would open it for approval.
Mr. Chair, I move that they be approved.
Second.
It's been moved and properly seconded that the minutes from our May 16th meeting be approved. All those in favor, let it be known by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, nays? Let the record reflect that the motion carries. One of the first things that we did when we were created, and let me just remind those of you who may need a reminder, that this commission was created for the purpose of setting salaries of all of our constitutional officers, our elected officials, judiciary, as well as the legislative body, including prosecuting attorneys. And so as we review the salary data, we try to have as much updated information as we can to make prudent kinds of decisions, because we know that monies do matter. To have good people, you must pay good people. And so from a data standpoint, we have contacted Dr. John Shelnut, who has come with our economic outlook for, what is this, about the third time, Dr. Shelnut? And he brings relevant information to help us as a commission to forward look and see what Arkansas perhaps may be doing. So with that, let me invite Dr. John Shelnut to come, and most of you are familiar with him. And commissioners, we know that he'll have something to enlighten us with. Dr. Shelnut, the floor is yours.
Thank you. It's a long way down there.
Well, you're welcome to come this way, please, if you don't mind. It's a long way for us, too, trust me. And if I may say, while Dr. Shelnut is being seated, as we have others to come, feel free to come this way. And for those of you who may want to have comments and remarks, this way as well. Dr. Shelnut.
I'm John Shelnut with the Department of Finance and Administration. I think you received the documents that I shared with staff. And I just wanted to start by reviewing the current economic indicators with some updates from the very latest information, starting with the state unemployment rate, which is now down at 3.4% in Arkansas as of May estimates. versus a national rate of 4.3%. That is a record low for Arkansas. And interestingly, we set that record along with six other states at the same time, which is also somewhat unusual for that many states to set records at the same point or at the same time. I should also mention that small states like Arkansas have a wider margin of error in these estimates in federal statistics, but we have a statistically significant difference with the national rate. That margin of error is plus or minus 0.9% in the case of Arkansas, and in this case we are listed as significantly different from that, the national average on the low side. Turning to payroll employment data, which we look at fairly closely for our work in forecasting, total non-farm employment grew 1.5% last calendar year. As of May, it's growing at 1.8% year over year. But we have noticed that with a current pattern of no growth in government employment, all levels of government, that we need to pay attention more closely to the private sector portion of the numbers. And what we see there is 1.9% growth last calendar year and 2.4% in the latest numbers for May as a year-over-year growth rate. So there is some acceleration taking place, at least in the private sector. And that is flowing through to income numbers that we're observing and into the revenue forecast. As I mentioned, government is flat or slightly negative. And over the, looking back over the last 5 or 6 years, it has been anomalously flat in Arkansas and rather low nationally, which stands out in the historical record. You didn't see that in past recoveries in the historical record. So it's an unusual long-term pattern for government employment in the states. The core sectors, taking out some of the low-wage, part-time oriented sectors of the economy, is growing at about 2%. And that roughly matches the national average. The lagging sectors in Arkansas currently are in retail, government, as I mentioned, energy, and information. So overall, I think the core sector data is showing us that we have a fairly strong, broad-based expansion taking place. Turning to personal income data, total personal income grew at 3.2% in 2016. I should mention that total income also counts transfer payments to individuals, and you recall last time that we were looking at no COLA coming to Social Security recipients, and that has been a drag effect on that total personal income number. What we look at more closely for revenue forecasting is the wage and salary component, the largest single part of that. And it grew 4.1% last year and appears to be accelerating in 2017. For example, our year-to-date revenue data for withholding, payroll withholding tax, has grown 5.4%. And even higher than that in recent monthly data. So we see evidence of acceleration in the economy where it counts. Per capita income grew 2.8% last year. And because the national economy is recovering at a pretty good clip now, Arkansas's per capita income as a percent of the U.S. has eased off a bit, back down to kind of its normal level of 79% of the U.S. average. So there are times when Arkansas looks better than the nation and we move up above 80%, and other times they catch up and we move back down to 79%. And that's what we're seeing now. But we're very close to the U.S. average, so it's not going to move around that much. I pointed out last time that the Arkansas cost of living is noticeably different from the national average. The nation is a more urbanized population than Arkansas, and that is reflected here with the cost of living estimated in Arkansas at only 87.5% of the U.S. average. Turning to the inflation numbers, inflation is moving above or at the 2% rate that is essentially the trigger for rising interest rates from the Federal Reserve Open Market Committee. And we've seen small increases in those rates, partly as a reflection of current inflation as well as expected inflation. The Fed really looks at core inflation, which takes out the volatility of food and energy. And we're looking at a growth rate of that of slightly above 2% going forward and in recent data. And that is essentially the concern of the Federal Reserve. However, in recent monthly data, CPI actually eased off a bit in the May data. It actually declined in both top line and core data. Among other metrics, in 2017, the state population reached 3 million for the first time. We'll see that verified with the mid-year estimates that come out from census. And the prime working age population of age 25 to 54 is at 1.14 million estimated. The concern for growth is that that population group is only growing at a very small fractional percentage. So it represents something of a cap to our growth rate, unless we can attract a lot of workers to the state, somewhat like you see in Northwest Arkansas as a local example. The estimated labor force participation rate in 2016 was only 56%. The percentage of families in poverty was estimated at 14.2%. The encouraging thing, though, is that this economic acceleration appears to be pulling people off from the sidelines and into the workforce, active workforce. And you can see that by the households receiving food stamps. There, Arkansas had a decline in the first quarter data of 14.3%, representing the second highest annual decline rate among the states. It means that we're pulling people off the sidelines. It's my interpretation of that. And putting them to work either in full-time or part-time jobs. Now, I think one area of interest in past meetings was the average annual wage income. This is from the census of covered employment and wages, the very best data set that we have for states. As I mentioned before, it is not a survey. It is required of all employers for their unemployment insurance reporting. And that shows an average annual wage of $41,571 in 2016. Projecting that forward in calendar year 17 and 18 with our economic forecast service information paired with this data as best we can, you can see some of that acceleration in calendar year 18 rising to 4% annual growth. Turning to the revenue forecast itself, we did revise the forecast on May 2nd. This was in accordance with state law to follow the completion of the regular session and to incorporate all the policy changes from the session as well as an update on the economic outlook at that time. Unfortunately, using data, partial data in late April during the tax filing season, obviously that's a fairly difficult task. We saw some warning signs at that time, and it appears they did not persist, but we cut the forecast on May 2nd by $70 million for current year and $29 million for FY18. And the next forecast update required by law would be early December, leading up to the next fiscal session. Now, we've had 1 month of data completed since that forecast cut, and the May data, May revenue results were $57.8 million above that revised forecast. So some of the concerns have dissipated since then, and we appear to be turning the corner in some categories. We are still watching, even now in June, the last month of the fiscal year, we are watching quarterly estimated payments from individuals and corporations, and we're watching sales tax because it underperformed most of the fiscal year. We've only had a few good months recently, so we're still watching that one fairly closely. So you have the biennial forecast from May 2nd in your handouts. Near the back of that, you have the official revenue forecast laid out in the general categories, including the largest categories of individual income and sales tax. And you see a growth rate in FY18 projected at 3.6%. Net available revenue growth, and some acceleration to 4.3% in FY19. That acceleration has drawn some questions in the past, and if you look at the details for FY19, it reflects the termination of the desegregation payments from the state in that year, and that triggers, with a lag, a sales tax cut in that year that's only in effect for about half the year, so it's a partial tax cut that year. The net of those two reflects this additional growth that you're seeing in FY19. So some policy effects are taking place that year. The underlying economy is fairly strong throughout this biennial period, with the exception of what we've seen earlier in this fiscal year. That was a fairly anomalous situation of sales tax underperforming what we saw in household incomes. Normally we expect a reasonable relationship between those two. It did not happen early in the fiscal year, the current fiscal year, but we are assuming and projecting that those return to normal relationships in the rest of the biennium, and that sales tax growth does recover and match, or close to matching, the income rise over this period of time. So with that, I'll stop, and I'll be glad to take questions.
Any questions from commissioners? Dr. Sheldon, did I see Director Walther here early? And if he's here, we certainly want to recognize him.
We do have our Deputy Director, Paul Lothian, sitting over here.
Mr. Lothian, happy to have you here. You all have been a tremendous help in helping us to understand not only the forward outlook, but the current status. And thanks to people like Director Walther and Ms. Kay Barnhill, who will ask to come if there are no questions, really giving us some insight. They've been gracious to meet with us and to get a better understanding. So if there are any questions or observations for Dr. Sheldon, thank you again, and it helps us to know that we're living in an optimistic time and an optimistic state. Is that a correct kind of a statement?
Thank you.
All right, thank you. Let me welcome Ms. Kay Barnhill, who will come and talk to us about the state pay plan, since we were created to deal with adjusting salaries up and down, and we try to also be relative, not only to those that we are responsible for, but for the other wonderful employees that make this state a good state. So without any further ado, welcome.
Thank you. I am Kay Barnhill, the State Personnel Administrator with the Department of Finance and Administration. And what I'm just going to tell you about, I didn't send you a lot of handouts, but I was going to kind of explain the process that we recently went through in redesigning the state pay plan. Back in October 15, my staff started looking at job salaries. We knew Arkansas was behind some of our surrounding states and many of our private industries within the state, but we didn't know exactly what our status was. The process that we went through was we purchased some software that gave us salary data for prevailing rates in Arkansas. You could refine it to Northwest Arkansas, to the Little Rock metropolitan area, and even to Fort Smith. So that we had this data we gathered. My staff spent many months matching our jobs, descriptions for the job descriptions within that salary database to determine that we really needed some serious adjustments for the state. What we came up with originally was wonderful, but it had a price tag of about $165 million, so it was not reasonable that we would be able to do. So what our task became was to look at our salary data and somewhat mitigate it with our ability to pay, or make sure that those two could merge together, because we wanted to be fair to most all employees. So what we've come up with this particular year are four new pay plans. One we call a general service pay plan, and it covers the majority, about 96% of state employees, and it ranges from, let me pull this out real quick, from a minimum of about $22,000 up to about $140,952. We also developed two separate pay plans for information technology specialists. We have a separate one because they're very market-driven at this point in time. We have extreme turnover with those. And also a different pay plan for our medical professionals, because we have nurses and doctors that we were trying to attract and enable to. We also, the final pay plan we had is what we call our senior executive service pay plan. This is generally for appointments by the governor or directors of agencies. That pay plan ranges from $108,000 to $201,000. So what we have done is gone through and assigned all employees to a particular grade, from our lowest level employee to our highest level employee. We've assigned employees to these grades. What we have done upon implementation is guarantee that all employees will receive a minimum of 1%. Everyone will receive a minimum of 1%. Some employees will receive more because the minimum of their grade has been raised significantly. What we found over the past year, and I'll go ahead and talk about it a little bit, maybe particularly with attorneys, since you're looking at attorney salaries and various things here, what we found with the state is we were able to attract, for example, new attorneys to work for the state. However, we were not able to retain them once they gained the expertise that we needed them to have. So last year, we took some extraordinary measures to develop a grid that would allow for more progression for attorneys at that time, which resulted in most attorneys receiving somewhat about an $8,000 to $10,000 increase over the course of the year. They got 8% on implementation, and then if their performance was above average or exceed standards, they were eligible for another 8% on their anniversary date. And so that did result in significant changes for those people. We have not renewed that grid. We're in the process of looking at it again in light of the new pay plan, but we did take some pretty serious salary difference. For example, the old attorney in our old pay plan actually had a starting rate of $45,377. On our new pay plan, attorneys will start at $56,000. So you can tell that those were a particular group that received a pretty large adjustment. We had some jobs like that where truly were behind the market by a tremendous amount. We had others. We found that we needed to take some pretty serious action in our world. We actually looked at jobs with a college degree. We had a lot of college degree jobs that might have been paying $27,000, $28,000. We made a decision that any job that required a college degree would be a grade 6 in our pay plan, which has an entry level of $36,000. So we combined what we did. We reduced 30 grades to this 15, and it did result in some changes in historical relationships between employees, but we had it based on market data, and then we also studied the organizational structure of the agencies for which the, where those jobs were located. That's kind of brief summary. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Yeah, thank you, Commissioners.
That was a lot of work.
Right.
Yes, ma'am.
Yeah, I've got one.
Yes, sir.
I hate to ask questions that show that I'm not really a top thing. But,
yeah.
When you say that employees get 1%, that's a guarantee?
Yes, sir. All employees are guaranteed.
That's all 1%. State employees.
All state employees, and that's about 54% of the employees. We have 28,000 state employees in our pay plan. 54% of those are receiving 1%, 46% are receiving greater than 1% based on their actual job assignment.
So that's to take into account maybe lawyers or somebody or football coaches or
whoever. We don't. It takes into account many lawyers, but not the lawyers with the judicial branch.
I'm just trying to understand if the 1% is fixed, or if there's a merit pay plan or something that makes their percentage to be a little larger than 1%.
Yeah, thank you for asking that. Let me clarify that a bit. On implementation, the 1% is guaranteed. What we have done, and it's a very important component of the pay plan, is we are going to have performance-based pay, which we will be implementing a new performance evaluation system in April, at which point employees will become eligible for performance increases. Over the past years, performance bonuses have been paid to employees at the end of the fiscal year. This year, we're paying bonuses of up to 3% based on employees' performance. Okay, next year, we're trying to build that performance component into the pay plan so that employees will have a way to increase their salary base as time goes by. What's happened to us in the past is all employees are stuck at the beginning of the pay plan with no way to get to the maximum of the pay plan, so they never go anywhere, and that contributed to our turnover factor. So we will have a performance-based component. I do not know what the percentages will be associated for fiscal year 18. That probably will not be decided until next April when we actually see what our revenue for, how our revenues are for pay.
Just one or two more. Don't read anything into this.
I'm not
trying to dig something out. I'm just trying to understand
this.
Does the same merit pay plan, is that applicable to the folks that are here that we're awarding or trying to decide how to increase theirs or not increase theirs? Constitutional officers, its employees, prosecuting attorneys, is that covered as part of what you just said by merit pay?
They are not specifically covered by the act that we administer, but I think in the past they have always followed pretty much the practice of whatever state agencies have done. I know that most all of them have. And it's but that's not for constitutional officers or for representatives or senators. But I think some with the staff. I guess I'm only talking more staff versus elected officials.
So the constitutional officers may not get a merit.
Right, but their employees probably would. Okay, that makes
sense? That's what I meant. Yeah. The employees, is that up to the state agency heads to decide the merit pay plan?
No, that's decided by the governor and the chief fiscal officer of the state.
And do the state constitutional officers get paid by the decision of the officer, the elected official, or is there somebody that decides they get 1% or they don't get 1%?
Okay, generally they are, state constitutional officers can determine what rates of pay they want to give their employees. Most of the time, the practice that I've noticed in the past is that they follow whatever the governor and the chief fiscal officer have established.
Thank you for your patience. Probably a quick line of saying that if you read my articles, you know that they
have no problem.
Commissioner Graves.
Is the 1% for the 54%, is that a July 1st increase?
We're implementing on July 2nd, right.
Okay.
Any other? I sure would like to have a copy, because this is educational to me, the various sundry groups.
Right.
And that grouping, so if you could get us a copy.
I'll send that to Mel. I will send that to her, and I've got a little overview of pay plan. I'll be happy to send to her, and I'll show you a little bit more. Maybe provide some specifics that I didn't hear today.
Well, for me, it would help me to compare apples to apples.
Sure.
Because we want to treat everybody fairly. Merit is a totally separate subject.
Right.
And we're dealing with base.
Right.
And so that grouping would help me to kind of understand how
the
philosophy. Imagine. Thank you very much. Okay. Anything else for Ms. Barnhill? Thank you very much. All right. As I mentioned earlier about why we were created and all of that, our agenda calls for us to talk about each of these individual groups, but I also would like to invite, if you will, anyone sitting as we come to these specific categories. For example, the prosecuting attorneys, divisions A and B, as we discuss those salaries and the data and input, if there's anyone from that organization who would like to come and to have a few remarks, we welcome you to do that. And Ms. Jenkins, I'm not sure, did we have a sign-in sheet too for those who would have something to say for or against once we get down to trying to make a reasonable decision as to 1% or 1.2% or minus 2%? But as we consider in all seriousness, these raises or adjustments. Okay. Thank you. Okay, looks like we have a couple of interested folk. I know that I've heard, at least we've heard from one of them, and they didn't put for or against on here. So that tells me that they are very objective people. So if Prosecutor Jagley would like to come, and Prosecutor Hsu, you all are welcome to come and make any comments as we start this deliberation regarding salary adjustments for the prosecuting attorneys. Welcome.
Thank you, sir. I'll be brief. We're not coming with any specific recommendation or advice other than to point out that in the first round of salary adjustments the commission implemented, we stuck with the party line of 95% of prosecuting attorneys being paid, Class A prosecuting attorneys, let me correct, being paid 95% of circuit judges' salaries, and Division B prosecuting attorneys being paid 85% of the Division A prosecuting attorneys. And we'd simply like to chip in. We think that that's a fair process, and we respect the will of the commission and would like them to be mindful of precedent.
Right.
And that's really all we've got.
All right, well, thank you. Nothing, Mr. Chu?
What Larry said.
Fair enough. Fair enough. All right, thank you all very much. Commissioners, any discussion regarding prosecutors with their historic philosophy that whatever we wind up doing for certain judges, et cetera, they would like to be included with that rationale? Any discussion? Hearing none, we shall move on. Anyone from the justices and judges? I thought I saw a cadre of folk here today. Please come. And we certainly welcome the Chief Justice, the Supreme Court, Justice Kemp, welcome. I think this is my first time to have him here, so you're recognized.
And I want to thank you, Chairman Ross. I appreciate the opportunity to visit with you again, for meeting with you in a May meeting with some of the questions that you had. I've had some information, provided that to Melanie, and hopefully you've got a copy of that in front of you. But let me just briefly review some of that information. And 2 years ago, whenever you set the salaries for the appellate judges, I believe you used a comparison with, I believe, five other states. And out of those five states, since then, the Supreme Courts have received a raise in their salaries in the states of Tennessee, Missouri, Iowa, and Louisiana. So I've provided that information to you to show you on the comparison of what Arkansas's current associate justices on the Supreme Court receive. Also reviewed from Westlaw case reporting. The cases, written opinions, have been reported on Westlaw for the past calendar year, starting with June the 7th of 2016 up to June 7th, 2017. I provided those figures as well in the chart. There's a second handout that I provided. I know Commissioner Graves had a question at the last meeting about any benefits that judges receive. And so I checked with, as far as the mileage is received, particularly from Court of Appeals of judges, and received that information, plugged that into the salary that the Court of Appeals judges receive to show the total compensation, which reflects that on the handout, it's got the color at the top, shows the salary with the mileage added, in comparison with the just the salary. Of course, the Supreme Court associate justices do not receive any mileage since we're statewide constitutional officers. But this gives you an idea of the amount of, I guess, total compensation that judges receive, which reflects that it's like at the present time of the 2000s, this is from 2016. Calendar year, that six of the associate justices, six of the Court of Appeals judges received as much as or more than the salary of the associate justices on the Supreme Court when you consider the mileage. And there's another handout that contains a pyramid on the second page. As I mentioned in my previous appearance, hopefully you got a copy of that as well, but as I mentioned in my previous appearance, what the Supreme Court's proposing is a pyramid from the level of courts for the district courts, which currently has a salary of $140,000 for a full-time state district judge. $160,000 would be the next level of the pyramid, which would be the trial judges for the circuit judges. And then proposing that the pyramid would go up for the appellate judges in the same percentage or same allocation from 140, 160, 180 for Supreme Court Chief Justice or Supreme Court Associate Justices. And then, you know, with the what we consider as a reasonable pyramid, the Court of Appeals would be somewhere in between the trial judges, the circuit judges, and the Supreme Court justices. You know, if you had a direct pyramid, it'd be 160 circuit judges, 170 Court of Appeals judges, 180 for the Supreme Court associate justices. And then, of course, the chief judge of the Court of Appeals has additional duties. Of course, the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court has additional administrative duties, and you know, that's why there's an additional salary for that Chief Judge and the Chief Justice. Currently, the salary is $166,500 for the Associate Justice, $180,000 for the Chief Justice. If you use that pyramid, it'd be $180,000 for the Associate Justice, $195,000 for the Chief Justice, and $170,000 for the Court of Appeals judges, $175,000 for the Chief Judge of the Court of Appeals. As Ms. Barnhill mentioned, with the new salary grid, with the 8% increase for attorneys in the executive branch being granted under that grid. If the Supreme Court had that same 8% increase, that would increase the salary for the social justices to approximately 180, with the chief justice up to 195. Now, on your website, I'm not sure if this is on the last page of the handout, but from January 30, 2015, there were judicial proposed salaries designated for discussion only. And this, at that time, on January 30, 2015, for consideration, it's showing that Commissioner Banks had proposed a salary for consideration, at least for associate justice at the Supreme Court, $172,000, with the Chief Justice, $185,000. Commissioner Berry, $175,000 for an associate justice, $191,000 for the Chief, and Commissioner James, $176,500 for an associate justice, $191,000 for the Chief. I kind of like their thinking, and hopefully y'all could consider that as well, and consider this request for the increase for the Supreme Court.
I just have an observation. The mileage has been added to their salary, but that's actually a reimbursement. Their salary is their salary, and the mileage is just a reimbursement, correct? Do they incur the mileage?
Because in a sense, yes.
So, I mean, if I'm incurring mileage and being paid for it, I'm being reimbursed for expenses. It's really not part of my salary.
It's not part of the salary. It's not taxed as income. Correct. It's not
taxed
as income.
Okay. Thank you.
And again, you know, as you point out, the Supreme Court has not received the mileage since we're statewide constitutional officers.
Thank you. Couple of things. I did not have a copy of not the inverted triangle, but I'd like to get a copy of that, please, for the commissioners as well.
Okay, Marty's got a copy here. That's everything you referenced.
And I would only say that initial discussion that we had with all of those that you cited, we still survived it. There's much debate.
I appreciate the opportunity to present this information to you.
Thank you very much. Appreciate it. Good information. Any other observations from any of the commissioners before we move on? Okay, our agenda calls for us to discuss, constitutional officers, General Assembly members, and then we can get to the meat of the overall proposals. I have not heard anything from any constitutional officers as chair, and have any commissioners heard anything from them at all? Haven't seen anything on the website or anything like that. Regarding the General Assembly, I believe that the Speaker of the House, we invited them to come, and Senator Dismaying as well as Jeremy Gillum, and they really reflected that they did have, and correct me, any kind of input at this time. And so we did extend an invitation for all of those representatives to come and share with us if they so chose. Commissioners, right now, I guess we can get to the point of some overall discussion of the salary proposals. But before we do that, is it? Yes, sir.
I'm David Guthrie, if I may be
yes, sir.
Recognized.
You recognize.
Thank you. For the record, I'm David Guthrie, Circuit Judge from El Dorado, and appear today as President of the Judicial Council, speaking on behalf of its members as well as the district court judges. and I appeared at the last meeting. I would adopt and reaffirm statements made at that time, as well as affirm the accuracy of those comments attributable to me in the post-hearing interview article in the paper the following day. In listening to Dr. Shelnut's presentation, I find that it is supportive of our request made last week that the economic indicators support some adjustment. And I reiterate our request for a 2% cost of living adjustment. And the governor's action as well is supported, I believe, in granting other state employees this adjustment, and we would ask that our request be favorably considered. I would also suggest to the commission, and it's outside of my bailiwick, but the development and implementation of a procedure whereby these salary adjustments can be made periodically and, importantly, automatically. I can assure you I would much rather be on the bench in my courtroom than here in this hot seat asking for money, but that is the nature of the beast, and we'll deal with it as best we can. But again, I appreciate the opportunity to present those remarks and ask for favorable consideration. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Any other public comment? The floor is open. Let me say that the last time we had public comment and we announced and all of those things, and I'm a forward-looking person as opposed to behind, but there were three individuals that showed up to offer input at our initiative. If you all recall it or not. But we certainly invite the public to share their comments, if not in public, for others who may not be on the bench but have some other very important things going on in their life as well, not able to come. But we also have opened up the website for people to make their responses. Excuse me. And we've received a couple, but not very many. So we want the people of Arkansas to know that this commission is not a rubber stamp commission. We welcome their input, but we try to look at data and we try to make consideration for where the market is as well as the status of our employees for this great state of Arkansas. So we welcome the public to do so. Having said that, commissioners, let's just have our discussion and let's talk about putting percentages or numbers or whatever the case may be that we can try to make the June 2nd deadline there, because we want all of the constitutional officers and judges and legislators and whatnot not to miss out if they are, of course, giving a salary adjustment. Having said that, the floor is open. Mr. Berry, anything, Commissioner?
Mr. Chair, just to kind of get things rolling, I think Judge Guthrie summarized my thoughts pretty well. After listening to Dr. Shelnut, it seems as if 2% inflation rate is something that, a number that we should consider. Okay.
And that's for each category?
Yeah.
Or just the district judge?
I think across the board.
Okay.
I concur. I'm already on record for that. It's a fair increase, and I've already feel that we should be scheduling next year's meeting that we get ahead of it in time. The hearing from the staff and the 54% with the 1% and the 46% with up to 3% increases. We're in line with what state employees are already doing. We made serious adjustments to all the salaries 2 years ago and went through an in-depth process coming up with that. So I concur with Mr. Berry on a 2% across the board every category.
Vice Chair, any remarks, comments?
Well, I guess if I understood this correctly, and I don't, this has been a good meeting and good information and good comments from the commissioners. Did I understand you that it's 2% across the board for all judges and all categories? Is that what you're basically saying?
I was talking about all categories, not just the judges.
Right. But as to the judges, what I'm trying to be sure and understand is 2% for all judges. Is that what you're saying?
Yes.
Okay. I'd love to talk about that in private a little bit, but I think that's what we're paid for, is come here and talk about it open. And there's nobody here, I think, any more so that respects the judiciary than I do, the Supreme Court, the appellate courts. And while we don't hear as much as we hear, I would suggest to you that just like the public trust the jury system to work, while they go about their lives, they expect the system to work for them. I think that's the same thing they feel about this commission and being fair and reasonable. I'm not, this sounds like a speech, it's not meant to be one. I'm concerned about both 2% and 11%. I don't know yet what is the right thing to do, but I'm very concerned about 11%. I would be disingenuous if I didn't say that. While we do have a good economic environment, the size and amount of that increase gives me serious pause. And if we're not scheduled to vote on this today, we're going to have more public comment. Is that correct? Or are we to the point where it's all right out here, you know, on the table, and whether or not we should? I'm not trying to move things too fast. I'd like to consider more myself, but I'm just one person.
Okay.
And
Mr. Chair,
that makes sense. I hope I didn't just.
Sorry. Yes.
If I could just jump in,
sure.
Just really quickly with to comment on something that Mr. Banks just said, and I think it was kind of a question about whether or not we were deciding today or,
right.
or we were going to discuss it. When I say we, I mean the commission. And I just want to remind the commissioners of the notice requirements under Article 19, which basically says once the commission makes a proposal to adjust salaries, it's required to give the public notice of that proposal and make available to the public all of the data that the commission reviewed in making the proposal, and then providing a reasonable period for commentary. So it seems to me that if the commission doesn't make any proposals today and waits till next week to do it, then thereafter the commission still is required to allow that reasonable period for commentary.
Okay.
And I felt that there was a need for action so we would meet the July 1 and the public comment timeframe. And that's why our meeting was already scheduled for next week for the public comment. So we would be with the state employees on the July 1st.
We're covered there, right?
And the interim between now and that time.
All right, I get it.
Using whatever vehicles that the public choose to do so.
Right.
The website, and for those who perhaps may choose to come here again. And we, if I understood the last meeting, we were welcoming people to come under your leadership here to come and give their input. So, Counselor, I think we would be in pretty good shape if we made a decision today, open it up, and the public would then come next week.
Exactly. And that's the only thing I wanted to point out, that the public commentary being scheduled next week is fine, assuming that there's been a proposal made today that the public has time to comment on.
Right, right. And the website and the envelope, if they so choose.
That meeting's on the 27th?
Right.
I believe so.
Okay, thank you.
Okay. Mr. Vice Chair, I want to be sure I got you on it. As we get down to the proposals, are you okay with the 2% that the other commissioners have suggested?
You mean to, as if we were voting on it today?
Proposing it, yes, sir.
Oh, proposing it.
Yes, sir. Not trying to put you on the spot. I mean.
Oh yeah.
Before you come in, if I may.
All right.
You see, I've always been a conservative guy, regardless of how the outlook might be. They're talking two. In my mind, I'm looking at less than two. But I want to be sure that we have your input, because, as was explained by the judge from El Dorado, we had a lot of debate, but we did come to a consensus about what was fair. So I welcome.
Well, let me give you this one back. If no, I'm not going to cut up. I would like a little more time, but if there is no more time, then I would be in support of 2%. But I'd like adequate time to explain that to the judges, because I think that seems dramatically downward from what they're requesting. But I don't have my thoughts in my mind yet as far as that. If all judges are getting a 2% request, then I think the commission needs to give an explanation. I can give an explanation, I suppose, at the time of the vote for mine. But to answer your question without a lot of gibberish, I would support 2%, but I wouldn't do so with great enthusiasm without having discussed whether 1% more or something, whether 2, 5, whatever. But I think we have covered it. You're right. I understand that. And I get the consensus of the body.
Okay. Let me say this too. When we, as a commission, come in, we're not representing any entities except the commission, regardless to who appointed us. We are here as a commission to make the best decisions that we can make based on the facts and the circumstances. So, though I was appointed by the former governor, I'm not concerned with all of the specifics. I'm looking at it from a broader standpoint of all of these different groups that we are to consider. And all of them are what? Good employees. All of them have shown that they care about this great state. And so I would just want us to know that we're looking at the whole ball of wax and not specifically at any individual group that we perhaps may or may not represent. Okay. Having said that, is there a motion for a proposal for consideration, formally?
Mr. Chair, I would make a motion that we provide a 2% raise to all the constitutional officers, judges, prosecuting attorneys, all the other people that we set salaries for across the board, 2%. And I could kind of explain my reasoning on that if you want me to at this point. I think one thing we're missing is that it's been since March of 2015 since we've done anything. So we're 2 years out now. I think this is something we ought to revisit every year so that we don't have to make big jumps from time to time. I like the idea of some kind of an automatic an index or something to look at, but I don't know that that's possible. I think it's just something we have to look at every year. So we're actually kind of a year behind now, in my thinking. I just don't want to end up in a situation where we do nothing for 4, 5, 10 years, and then whoever replaces us down the road has to undergo what we went through last, or 2 years ago.
That's a motion. Is there a second?
Second.
Any additional comments?
Ditto. Okay. We're almost word for word. Okay. Yeah, we need to have a scheduled meeting next March, April, May pickup, where we have some feel for the economic forecast, where we have been and where we think we're going, and that we do this routinely, because 2% is not a big number, and we are a year behind. And so that's my second, that's my comment.
Any further discussion? If not, all those in favor of the proposal of the 2% across the board, let it be known by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, nays? Motion carries. All right. Thank you very much, commissioners and public. And what we will do before we go to any old business or new business, I believe next Tuesday is June 27th, and we will have a public comment input, and if it's just four of us, we will do the people's business. Hopefully the others will be able to come. If not, then we will do the people's business as best we can.
Is it 9 o'clock?
9 o'clock.
Next Tuesday.
Is this same room okay, Ms. Jenkins?
I do, sir.
Okay, all right.
Mr. Chair, do we need to discuss the notice? Are you going to take care of that?
No.
Okay.
No, I understand that Ms. Jenkins from the auditor's office is going to take care of that, but it's just going to be a meeting, and so whatever fashion we usually notice our meetings on the...
It'll be on the website, and it'll go out to the media.
Right.
Okay.
Which it actually already has. It's on the website, and it's already gone out to the media.
Okay.
All right. If there's no other business, let me say this finally. I want to thank Vice Chairman Banks again for conducting our last meeting. And I really appreciate it very much. And the commissioners who are diligent and committed that we do the people's business, and the public who've come and given us input. Our meeting is now adjourned. Thank you.
Mr. Banks, Mr. Wells. I need y'all to sign that for me. I just want to thank you guys. Appreciate y'all's hard work on this commission. And thank you, Melanie, for your hard work. Good to see you.
Good to see you too.
I'm going to slip out my tooth. Mr. Berry, if I can get you to sign that before you walk away, please.
He knows that right.
There we go.
Next one.
Yes, I'll put it down.
Yeah.